The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with something that's kind of very appropriate for this time of year. And although they really haven't started to come out strongly yet, they're going to be out real soon. 10 home remedies for bug bites that actually work. Feeling itchy and scratchy after beating alive all hungry insects? These chemical-free, all-natural remedies can help fast. Surefire ways to stop scratching. There are so many things to look forward to in the summer. Warm weather, long days, backyard barbecues, and lots of sunshine. But one of the less desirable features that comes along with warm nights on the patio is bug bites. Those pesky, itchy, sometimes sore skin markings can vary depending on what bit you, but they're all awful in their own way. While you want to do your best to ward off these pests, the mosquito repellents and bug zappers, bites can still happen despite your best efforts. But you don't have to just grin and bear it as you scratch your skin raw. In fact, you can easily stop the itch with some smart and easy home remedies for bug bites. The basic premise is that when an insect bites, it releases its saliva into the epidermis, causing the skin to have an inflammatory response with localized itchiness from release of histamine and other biological chemicals, explains Monisha Bahanot, MD, a triple board certified physician who specializes in integrative medicine. Unless you're experiencing an allergic reaction, the best after-the-fact fixes will counteract that reaction, soothing skin, reducing inflammation, and even preventing infection. Even better, the suggestions on this list are all natural, so you don't have to worry about slathering potentially toxic chemicals on your skin. Stock up on these so you have these on hand whenever you need them. Peppermint essential oil. This delectable essential oil doubles as a bug bite soother. The cooling sensation it provides to the skin counteracts the burning, stinging, and itching. Plus, peppermint is both anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial, so it may help reduce infections, says David Friedman, ND, a doctor of naturopathy and a clinical nutritionist. Incidentally, peppermint can also prevent bug bites in the first place. Mosquitoes, fleas, wasps, and spiders hate the smell of peppermint oil, says Dr. Friedman. Regardless of whether you're using peppermint oil as a home remedy for bug bites or as a preventive measure, Dr. Friedman advises against applying directly to the skin because it may cause burning and stinging. Instead, he suggested mixing it with a carrier oil like jojoba or coconut. Use 5 drops of peppermint oil per ounce of carrier oil before applying it to your skin, he said. You can also make a diluted spray by filling a spray bottle with water. Mix 3 drops of essential oil with 4 drops of carrier oil per ounce of water. Lavender essential oil. If you've ever taken a big whiff of lavender, you know instantly calming it can be. Well, it's equally calming on your inflamed, irritated, bug-bitten skin. Renowned for its ability to soothe inflammatory skin conditions, including minor burns, wounds, and acne, lavender essential oil can help reduce itching and inflammation within minutes of application, says Melanie St. Albers, a clinical herbalist and the author of The Simple Guide to Natural Health. She suggests using a brand that's made of 100% French lavender grown at high altitudes, like this formulation from Orchid and Temple. Apply 1 or 2 drops directly to the affected area and reapply as needed. Baking soda. This home remedy for bug bites is great for both adults and children, since baking soda is so gentle. A true multitasker, baking soda doesn't just work its magic in your meals. It can also relieve irritation and itchiness. To make a paste, Toronto-based naturopathic doctor Olivia Rose, ND, recommends combining 1 tablespoon of baking soda with water. Add enough water to form a paste and apply it to the bug bite, letting it dry before removing with a cool washcloth, she says. If you happen to be covered in bites, add 1 cup of baking soda to the neutral temperature bath. Echinacea liquid extract. This natural remedy has been a staple in people's medicine cabinets for centuries, and for good reasons. Echinacea is a liquid extract from the echinacea plant. By the way, that's E-C-H-I-N-A-C-E-A. Echinacea, I believe is how it's pronounced, which is part of the daisy family. It's been used for everything from treating colds and soothing sore throats to stopping infections in their tracks. If you notice that the area around your bite is becoming red, hard, and swollen, apply echinacea tincture to the affected area every hour until the swelling is gone, says Seidowers. Apply the tincture liberally but pat it into your skin with your fingertips, using at least 1/4 of a teaspoon per application. If the swelling does not decrease significantly after 24 hours of consistent use, or if you start to run a fever at any time, she recommends calling your doctor immediately. Ice. Ice can be oh so soothing in a variety of things that ail you, bug bites included. St. Hours explained that this simple remedy works with itching, swelling, and overall discomfort for two reasons. First, your sensory nerves can only communicate a certain amount of information to your brain at one time. So when you apply Ice Cube, the nerves that were telling your brain, "This is itchy," change their tune and start telling your brain, "This is cold." She says, second, the coldness reduces local swelling and inflammation. Using a gel-filled ice pack like this well-reviewed option by Rester's Choice, which I don't have in front of me, I'm sorry about that, keep things less messy and melty. That said, you might want to place a cloth between your pack and the skin for added comfort, and you only want to apply it for a few minutes at a time. By the way, the reason they're recommending these things, there's a shop now a button on here that I can't press, unfortunately. Plantain leaves. Although it shares the same name with a starchy fruit similar to a banana, the plantain that can help with bug bites is an entirely different plant, explained St. Hours. It's a common weed that grows well in packed soil, which means it's often easy to find at playgrounds, hiking trails, and even growing along the sidewalk in cities. You can recognize plantain species by the vertical veins that run along the leaves, which are organized like a circle of rays emanating from a single point. This plant has impressive wound-healing abilities, which is why it's an ingredient used in many healing salves and ointments. Dr. Friedman recommends making a paste using plantain leaves and bentonite clay or activated charcoal with water and placing it directly on the bug bite for immediate relief. If you don't have these other ingredients, you can also put a half a cup of dried plantain leaves in a blender or coffee grinder with enough distilled water to make a paste, he says. You can also substitute apple cider vinegar in place of water and grind it until it's thick consistency, not too watery, before putting it directly on the skin. Vinegar. You may catch more flies with honey, but vinegar can also do the trick. Vinegar can reduce stinging or burning sensations and a natural disinfectant, especially if you've been scratching a bite, says Bernard Bouton, manager and associate certified entomologist at Triangle Pest Control. He recommends soaking a washcloth in an absorbent paper towel in cold water and vinegar and apply it to the bite for a few minutes. If you've been a mosquito feast, and you have multiple bites, dilute 2 cups of vinegar in a lukewarm bath and soak for 15 to 20 minutes, he adds. Oatmeal. You probably have this ingredient somewhere in your pantry, but you may never thought of it to use it on your body. As it turns out, oatmeal provides healing, moisturizing, and antioxidant properties for the skin, making it one of the best home remedies for bug bites. Oatmeal can relieve itching and reduce swelling, which is exactly what you need after getting a bit stung or by something, says Amy Lawhorn, vice president for the pest control company Mosquito Squad. Simply mix oatmeal with water to create a paste and apply it directly to the bite, she says. Let it sit for 10 or 15 minutes and then wipe it off. That's interesting. Aloe vera. Aloe is well known for soothing sunburns, but few people realize that it can also ease the sting and itch of bug bites. When applied directly to the bite, the cooling action of aloe vera gel will help shrink swelling and reduce the itch, says Dr. Rose. If you have a mature aloe vera plant at home, that's a bonus. But you can also purchase aloe vera gel, which works equally well, and is an especially good idea if you have a pet parent, since aloe works among the house plants that are toxic to cats and dogs. Toothpaste. To stop a mosquito bite from itching like crazy, simply apply a little toothpaste to it. When a mosquito bites you, it releases an anticoagulant that lets it feed without being detected, explains Bouton. But your body's natural reaction to that anticoagulant is to create histamines and send them to the bitten area, which is why you itch and the bite mark swells. He recommends applying a minty toothpaste to the bite so that you can benefit from its soothing and cooling properties. Toothpaste is also a natural astringent, so it can prevent further swelling, he adds. And that's it. That's the 10 solutions. And continuing our theme here for warm weather things, how about skin care for warmer weather? Simple steps to take for healthy skin in spring and summer. This time of year, in most parts of the country, a change of weather means a change of clothing. Down and fleece undergarments get shed in favor of light sweaters and jackets, and eventually just t-shirts. But simply changing clothing isn't enough to keep our skin healthy as the seasons change. We asked dermatologists for their best tips on taking care of skin, the body's largest organ, as the temperature rises. Pay attention to the pollen. Temperature isn't the only thing that rises in spring. Pollen counts go up, too, and allergies may be exacerbated. Allergies to pollen or other environmental allergies can create redness and inflammation underneath the eyes, says Whitney Bowe, M.D., a dermatologist based in New York City. When that happens, it makes under-eye bags larger and wrinkles around the eyes more pronounced. Talk to a dermatologist about prescription ingredients that can heal the skin and calm the inflammation. If you're prone to allergies, your doctor may recommend taking an over-the-counter non-sedating antihistamine each morning, for example, to help avoid flare-ups. Up your SPF. Everyone should wear sunscreen year-round, but dermatologists agree that it's even more important during the warmer months. Not only are you spending more time outside, but also the UVA-UVB rays can be more intense, and the damage accumulates over your lifetime, says Dendy Endelman, M.D., a New York City-based dermatologist. Incidental sun exposure, even for only 10 to 15 minutes a day, adds up over time and can cause significant sun damage and accelerated photoaging, hyperpigmentation, and wrinkles. Using a high SPF sunscreen, 30 SPF at a minimum and 50 SPF ideally, can reduce the accumulation of chronic UV damage that's linked to non-melanoma skin cancer and aging. Spring clean your skin products. There are no U.S. Food and Drug Administration regulations for skincare products expiration dates, though some products do show a suggested expiration date. But over time, products may discolor, smell funny, or become contaminated with bacteria. Go through your skincare products and sunscreens and toss the things that have been around a little too long, says Dr. Bowe. That includes cosmetics, shaving creams, and beard oil. Anything you apply near your lips or eyes should be tossed after a year. And don't forget to clean your brushes, combs, sponge, and razors. Consider your cleanser. Mild soap is useful in cold, dry weather, but a slightly more acidic cleanser will help control shine and sweat more efficiently, especially for people whose skin is oily to start with. This is particularly true as spring days become much warmer in the afternoon than the morning, says dermatologist S. Manjula Jagasathy, M.D., CEO and founder of Miami Skin Institute. Your cleanser should keep your skin clean and sweat-free throughout the day. With a more acidic cleanser, it's likely to do. Look for ingredients such as alcohol, salicylic acid, and glycolic acid. Exfoliate care. Mild exfoliation twice a week at most will remove dull, dead skins from the skin surface, says Tissapora Slanehouse, that's an interesting name, M.D., a dermatologist based in Beverly Hills, California. When dead skin cells are combined with sweat, grease, and skincare products, they can clog pores and lead to acne. Avoid cleansers that exfoliate with rough pieces such as shells, nuts, and microbeads. Look for general products that contain salts and sugars or enzymatic scrubs with fruit acids. Wow, that's sophisticated, isn't it? Lighten up on the lotion. In the winter, heavier face and body moisturizers help combat the cold and dry air. But when temperatures rise, so does humidity. During the warmer seasons, lighter lotions will likely provide enough moisture for the skin, while heavier formations may lead to clogged pores and breakouts, says Melissa Pelang, M.D., a dermatologist at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio. Look for products that contain ceramides or hyaluronic acid, which are both hydrating agents. And go easy on the makeup. Heavy foundations and concealers can cause a buildup and lead to breakouts. This is even more likely during the spring and summer, when heat and humidity can lead to sweat and clogged skin, says Dr. Engelman. Switch to lighter products, such as a CC cream or mineral powder foundation. It will balance out the extra oil production and leave your skin looking healthier, she says. Add an antioxidant. Antioxidants are particularly important during the summer, when stronger UV rays can damage unprotected skin. Not only can too much sun lead direct DNA damage, but it can also break down collagen and elastin due to UV-induced free radicals, explains Dr. Shanehouse. Applying an antioxidant serum such as vitamin C in the morning after cleansing your face and before applying sunscreen to help strengthen the skin barrier. Reduce retinol. Many products marketed to both men and women contain the vitamin A derivative retinol, a milder over-the-counter version of Retin-A, which is available by prescription only. The Fountain of Youth potion that promises to reduce fine lines and wrinkles, strengthen the skin, and even out skin tone that can make your skin more sensitive to sun. Retinol boosts cell turnover, which means eliminates dead skin cells and replaces them with new ones. And these healthy new cells are more sensitive and prone to burning from the sun's rays, says Joel Schlesinger, MD, a dermatologist in Omaha, Nebraska. You can still use retinol during the spring and summer months, but apply it at bedtime instead of in the morning, and use a strong sunscreen. If your skin gets irritated by retinol use, reduce the frequency to only one or two times a week, Dr. Shanehouse suggests. And here's the thing on moles, which we all know can be dangerous. Mole mapping. Mole mapping is recommended for people at high risk for skin cancer, which includes me. I have fair skin. I'm covered in moles, and I have two grandparents who were diagnosed with melanoma. The procedure involves a skin specialist taking photographs of every mole, then watching for potentially dangerous skin changes. For my mole mapping, I stood in a room wearing only my underwear. I was self-conscious, but I'll take embarrassment over skin cancer any day. I assumed a series of poses so the camera could capture every inch of my skin. Thankfully, the photos didn't reveal anything that needed to be biopsied or checked out further. All good until next year. Ashley Lewis. Now, this next article is kind of interesting. I'm always at question how much about automobiles, bicycles, and such like that I should read, since obviously the listeners are visually impaired. But many of our listeners, while visually impaired as far as reading and such are concerned, are very normal as far as driving and riding and things like that. So we're going to do a little bit. It's interesting that this article comes up when I have an article from Consumer Reports that covers e-bikes as well. And this is e-bike safety tips. Before you go on your next two-wheel adventure, make sure you're familiar with the ins and outs of bicycle safety. This holds true whether you're riding a traditional bike or an e-bike, one powered by an electric motor in addition to the pedaling. Many of the safety recommendations are the same for both types of bikes. Wear a helmet. Ride with the flow of traffic rather than against it. Make sure you're visible to motorists. Some e-bikes now come with lights. Know how to use your arm to signal the turns. Left, extend your left arm out to the side. Right, extend your right arm or bend your left arm up at the right angle. Don't talk on the phone while riding, text, or listen to music. If you're on an e-bike rider, heed these tips too. Be sure the bike is ready to ride. This starts with checking that tires are inflated and brakes are working properly. If the bicycle hasn't been used for a while, take it for a tune-up before you take it for a ride. For an e-bike, also make sure your battery is charged, says Ash Lovell, Electric Bicycle Policy Director at People for Bikes, a cyclist advisory organization. And before and after every ride, inspect your bicycle for damage. Be aware of your speed. This is important for e-bike riders. With the ability to go faster comes the responsibility to know when you should slow down, says Lovell. Know the rules of the road. When you're riding in the street, even in a protected bike lane, read the signals, pay attention to lane markings, and check the signage to see where e-bikes are allowed, Lovell says. 36 states have adopted a classification for e-bikes. Signs in those states may specify which types of bikes are allowed on which roads and paths. Check the People for Bikes website, peopleforbikes.org, for more information. And here's news from the world of medicine. Therapy for back pain. More than 80% of American adults will experience chronic lower back pain at some point in their lives, and it's notoriously difficult to treat. Chronic pain can be like a false alarm stuck in the on position, with certain brain networks overreacting to even mild pain stimuli. In a University of Colorado study, two-thirds of the chronic back pain patients who underwent 4 weeks of pain reprocessing therapy, PRT, were pain-free or nearly pain-free after 1 year. In PRT sessions, patients learn to think about pain as safe rather than threatening, and as they do things they've been afraid to do. These results provide strong evidence that psychological treatment can deliver lasting relief for chronic back pain, reducing the need for medications, surgeries, and other invasive treatments that can be costly, ineffective, and even dangerous. Social envy is toxic. Last year, a whistleblower from Facebook revealed that the social media giant knew from internal studies that one of its parent company's platforms, Instagram, made people feel worse about themselves, contributed to increased depression and anxiety. This was attributed to users constantly evaluating themselves against others. Perhaps unsurprisingly, social comparisons are bad for your physical health as well. According to a study published in the Journal of American Heart Association, people who ranked their social status low in relation to others had higher blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugar, and body mass index, raising their risk for heart disease and type 2 diabetes. Researchers suggest counterbalancing time spent on social media by making an effort to join supportive, inclusive social groups, whether online or off. It's interesting. There was a commentary on a show I was watching last evening concerning that very subject, the fact that depression and such are very common with people who spend a lot of time in social media. Spark bandages detect infection. Usually, if you want to see whether a wound is healing properly, you need to remove the bandage, which can be painful and risky, giving bacteria and other pathogens a chance to attack. But now Australian researchers at Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology University have developed smart wound dressings that detect biochemical changes in the skin. The dressings glow brightly under UV light if infection starts to set in, or if the wound was already infected, the absence of the fluorescent glow signals that the infection is cleared. After more tests, the product will be available to doctors around the world. AI helps out rule out breast cancer. Mammograms help save lives through early detection of cancer. Unfortunately, screening is about four times more likely to miss detecting cancer in women with extremely dense breasts who have twice the risk of developing breast cancer as the average woman. Now a Netherlands study has shown that an artificial intelligence-based screening tool currently being tested can rule out cancer for 40% of patients with extremely dense breasts and no detectable lumps. This will allow radiologists to focus on less certain cases more quickly. Language brain games. A University of Kansas study has shown that if given the opportunity for immersive learning, adults can pick up a new language almost as easy as kids do. When learning a language, the brain builds white matter connections between brain areas, leading to better memory skills, focus, and agility from switching from one task to another. Baking with less salts has benefits. Globally, people consume an average of 10.1 grams of salt per day, twice the recommended maximum amount, and a rate that raises the risk for heart disease, stroke, and kidney disease. According to a University of Illinois study, reducing salt in baking doesn't mean decreasing taste or leavening ability. The research suggests using half the amount of salt called for in recipes. How about lightening up a little bit from the serious stuff and do all in a day's work? During a flight from Seattle to Chicago, my neighbor, a flight attendant, split the back of his pants. No problem. He simply turned around and stationed himself in front of the beverage cart, facing forward. It worked, or so he thought, until he got to the last row and a female passenger leaned over and whispered, "Your fly is open." The irate daughter. One of our nursing home residents stormed into my office demanding answers. She had just read her father's chart and couldn't understand why he was so disliked by the staff. It took a while, but I was finally able to explain that her that the offending comment on the chart, S.O.B., was a nursing abbreviation for short of breath. Correction, from thevulture.com. This article originally claimed that Ben Platt's Dear Evan Hansen haircut was a wig. It is astoundingly his own hair. My coworker asked the tattoo artist to draw the Chinese character for free that he found using a translation app. Turns out it was very close to being accurate, but not quite. His new tattoo actually reads, "Tax-free." Every year, the prison where I work as a volunteer chaplain holds a training session for staff. This year, the instructor kicked things off by asking, "What kind of people do you work among?" He was instantly bombarded with a slew of angry responses. "They're lazy. They can't be trusted. They steal. They lie." And another colleague added, "Some of the inmates aren't all that nice either." 9/11 around the globe. Lured with jam. Authorities in Poland received a report of an unusual animal lurking in a tree, terrorizing an apartment house. "People aren't opening their windows because they're afraid it will go inside," the caller said. Officers wondered if the animal was a bird of prey. But the frightened caller said it more closely resembled an iguana. They were all wrong. The beast in question turned out to be a croissant someone had tossed out the window. Oh, jeez. More presents. At one point, Takashi Miyagawa, 39, was dating 35 women simultaneously. But where some might see a Casanova, others saw a cat. That's because he dated the 35 women just to get 35 birthday gifts. After a few grew suspicious, Miyawaga was arrested and charged with swindling them. One online commentator admitted, "He's an awful person, but I envy his time management skills." Where am I? After a hard night of drinking, a Turkish man woke up in the forest. As he headed home, he came upon a search party looking for a missing man. Being a good citizen, he offered to help, which he did until he began calling out a familiar name. His. Bayun Mutlu had been reported missing by his wife, and the rescuers could now say that he had been found, with the help of Bayun Mehu. Starting a job feels like you're a new character on the 10th season of a TV show. Good Neighbors, a delectable collection of stories about community and kindness. The Sunshine Mirror. And there's a picture of an African-American gentleman sitting on a bench, bright, colorful palm trees in the background. Almost 8 years ago, Al Nixon decided to begin each day from a bench with a spectacular view of the St. Petersburg waterfront. Let's call it life rising, because watching a sunrise makes me feel centered before starting my day, says Nixon, who works for the city's water department. A year later, a woman stopped to say hello, and she said something that changed his perspective on his daily ritual. She said, "You know, every morning when I see you sitting here, I know that everything is going to be okay," Nixon recalled. "That's when I knew. I needed to pay attention to the people walking past. I needed to make eye contact and let people know that we matter to each other." Instead of staring straight ahead at the waterfront, Nixon started smiling at people and striking up conversations. And pretty soon, more than a few early risers began joining him on the bench, sometimes unburdening themselves, asking him for advice about relationships and careers and personal problems. "I was happy to listen," Nixon 59 said. "I wanted them to walk away knowing they didn't have to feel alone." When you're in your 50s and 60s or beyond, a lot of people feel their purpose hasn't been fulfilled. At this stage in life, this is definitely my purpose. So every morning, weather permitting, Nixon, who has three grown children and a long-term significant other, rises at 4:30. He puts on a fedora, slips a cup of coffee, and then drives 7 miles to the waterfront, where he'll stay for 2 hours. His presence and his openness to listen have led some to nick him the Sunshine Mirror. Al is this calm, constant presence, says Jeff Frazin, 64, a retired real estate developer who met Nixon while taking a walk along the waterfront a few years ago. His unique gift is he listens to everyone. "It's more than that," said Dee Glauer, who is in her late 50s. She met Nixon while out strolling 3 years ago. "He listens without judgment and without any kind of return expected. While most people simply wave or drop by briefly to make small talk, others are anxious to step into his office," and as in parentheses, "often," or quotation marks, "and spend a few minutes with someone who will listen." Now, what a word problem a person wants to hear, Nixon lends an ear. You have to have an open heart and an open head, because you never know who's going to walk up and what they might need, Nixon said. "Every person who stops by the bench deserves my undivided attention." He remembers the day a couple came by to talk about problems in their relationship. "The husband was always working, rarely home," Nixon said. "It was ruining their marriage. I told him, 'My friend, if your wife's revelation doesn't scare you, then maybe the possibility of losing her will.'" Nixon was right. The man admitted. He started to cry and agreed that he needed to slow down, said Nixon. "We all hugged each other and we became friends after that. I still see them every now and then over lunch." "No topic is off limits," Nixon said, "but some people sit down and don't want to talk at all. They simply want to sit next to someone and share the silence." A woman stopped once and said, "I just want to sit here with you," he recalled. "We stared at the water for an hour. Then she said thank you and walked away. She just wanted a moment of peace and to know she wasn't alone. And in that moment, in that hour, on that morning, she truly wasn't." What a great story. And with that happy things, we'll swip over to Consumer Reports. And last week we were talking about, we closed out last week's program with a goodbye to mess, quick ways to organize your stuff. And we got partway through the article. So let's finish that up today before we do the thing on e-bikes. Chaotic linen closets. 3 hours. Shelf dividers, bins and baskets, labels and vacuum bags are what's needed. Stock shelves by frequency of use. Use shelves at eye level and below for things you use regularly. Bulkily, less frequently used items like extra blankets and pillows can go in soft-sided bins on an upper shelf or on the floor, says Philip, considering uses low close Consider storing super low-use bedding in stackable cube vacuum storage bags or vacuum bags hidden in boxes. These are both attractive and stackable, says Amy Taco, certified professional organizer. Order shelves by room. Use shelf dividers to keep each room's stacks together and upright, and label the shelf by room or user. Fold washcloths and store them in a rectangular basket. Give away linens that aren't part of a matching set. Animal shelters, for example, often appreciate bedding donations. Keep just enough. If you need, no one needs 30 towels and a bed. Should have two sheet sets, one to use it and one as a backup. An easy way to keep sheet sets from getting broken up, store them inside one of the matching pillowcases. Contain and conceal. Opt for opaque, small bins that hide the jumble inside over-the-counter medicines, cosmetics, and more. Label each bin externally so that you know what it holds. Discard anything expired or no longer used. Pharmacies will typically take back medicines, store medicines out of reach of children. Store bulk buys elsewhere. Figure out how many rolls of toilet paper, paper towels, and soap multi-packs you need in a month. Then let your stock dwindle so that your closet isn't crammed. Store warehouse club products in the basement or garage and stash smaller quantities under bathroom sinks. Replenishing is needed, says Tokos, who keeps a magnetic grocery list stuck to her fridge for family members to add to. And this is one that I think that all of us with electronics have, is tangle cables and cords. 20 minutes to fix. You need rubber bands, Velcro strips, cable sleeves and labels, cable box and cord covers. Corral your cables. To neaten up cables currently in use, wrap the excess and hide it behind furniture. Church is Sharon Lowenheim, certified professional organizer and founder of Organizing Goddess. Bundle up extra long thin cables, rubber bands, hair ties, or Velcro ties. Slide thicker groups of wires into a flexible cable sleeve, like Alectech's 10-foot half-inch cable sleeve for $10 from Amazon. Hide ugly plugs. Reroute unsightly wall plugs into a surge protector behind a large piece of furniture. Lowenheim likes the Belkin surge protector with flat rotating plug, $14, for Amazon. Because the plug fits in any outlet, you can then hide the surge protector inside a cable box, or use a decorative cover, cord cover that adheres to a baseboard to hide cables in busy zones. D-Line makes sleek versions of both. Get cords off the floor. Secure chargers on the surface where you juice up your smartphone or tablet with a weighted cord holder such as Cord Buddy Charge Cord Holder for $10, or just direct wires where you want them with a small adhesive cable holder like Blue Long Cable Drop for $10 from BlueLounge.com. Label everything. Designate a spot to keep cords not currently in use and make sure everyone in the household knows where to find them. Label each cord with the device it's for and store it inside a plastic bag with other similar cords, power, audio, etc. Lowenheim suggests putting any unmatched cables in a box labeled mystery cables, along with the date you stored them there. After a year, drop off any unneeded ones in an electronics recycling facility or see whether Best Buy will accept them back. When you start organizing a space, you always come across things that don't belong. Don't leave the area you're working in to remove them. Once we move to another space, we lose focus. That's what maybe Tokos, Frank gets organized. Crowded garages and sheds, they give that a day. Storage bins, baskets, shelves, tool chests, books, and racks. Sort and stow. Group storage items into a general category such as hardware and tools, household items, gardening, sports, and holiday decorations. Put electronic items in sturdy labeled boxes or bins. Weathertight totes keep out moisture and pets and stack neatly. Store them on wall shelving such as U-lines, which comes in multiple configurations. Organize by size. If you're a do-it-yourselfer with lots of hand tools, a classic tool chest on wheels with multiple drawers, one example, the Craftsman 2000 series, that you store them efficiently and have a work surface, or install a pegboard available at home centers on a wall and hang tools from hooks. Get larger tools like shovels, rakes, and brooms off the floor with hooks, or install a tool rack such as the Wallman wall-mounted tool organizer for $50 from Amazon. Park all your wheels. Designate a parking space for heavy items such as snowblowers and lawnmowers. Suspend bikes from joists or use floor stands or wall racks like Wallmaster Bike Rack, $20 for two, Amazon. Things like sled skis and surfboards are light enough to hang from a sidewall with other sporting gears. And they have a list here of Oxford Gray storage boxes from $30 to $40, Yukon shelf dividers for $22, and those kind of things. the right electric bike for you. And there's a picture here of a gentleman riding an electric bike in a suit with a briefcase slung over his shoulder. Electric bikes are all the rage, as many people embrace them for around-the-town errands, short commutes, and weekend fun. We rate several categories of e-bikes in various price ranges. The bicycle boom of the 70s is back, but this time it's gone electric. According to NPD Group, a firm that tracks bicycle industry, electric bike sales have more than doubled since the pre-COVID-19 days of 2019. And their popularity is still on the rise. It's worth noting out that prices are climbing with demand. The e-bikes in our rating cost between $650, Swagtron EB5 Pro Plus, and $2,850, Cannondale Adventure Neo 4 and Trek Verve 2 Low Step. All e-bikes rely on electric motor, either to assist human pedal power or to replace it altogether, depending on the class. It's a little wonder e-bikes have become so popular, given how they're made cycling so much more accessible, including to people who might not have the physical ability to travel far on a conventional leg-powered bicycle. Even for those who enjoy pedaling, e-bikes expand on the capabilities of regular bikes, making it possible to ride to work or carry heavy cargo without becoming a sweaty mess, and to simply travel farther and up more hills than if you had to rely on pedal power alone. E-bike classes explained. Before you buy, considering how and where you intend to use an e-bike. As with conventional bikes, many electrified versions come in many styles, including commuters, cruisers, and mountain bikes, among others. But first, you need to decide on the class or level of assistance you're looking for or need. An important factor will be where you live, because the presence or lack of bike lanes and how your locale regulates e-bikes will affect how you can use one. A few states treat e-bikes like motorized vehicles and require a special operator's license. To learn more about your state's rules, go to peopleforbikes.org. More than half of the states treat them as a type of bicycle depending on top speed and how power is applied, for example, through the pedals or hand control. There's an explanation of each class. Class 1. These e-bikes are pedal assist. There's no throttle to get the bike going. The electric assistant works only when the rider is pedaling, and it cuts off above 20 miles per hour. It's possible to get even conventional bicycles moving faster than that down a steep hill. Class 2. These also have an electric motor that works up to 20 miles per hour, either while the rider is pedaling, pedal assist, or without any pedal power. These bikes have a thumb-operated lever or a twist-grip throttle for applying power. Class 3. These e-bikes have to be pedaled to move too, and provide pedal assist only, no throttle control, up to 28 miles per hour. They usually have a speedometer. CR is not tested in the Class 3 bikes because they're less safe due to their higher speed and less likely to be allowed on bicycle paths. Now, choose your bike type. Once you determine the level of assistance you need, pick the style of electric bike that's best for you. Focus on where you'll be riding, country roads, city bike lanes, and make sure you know how e-bikes are regulated in your locale and whether they're allowed on bicycle paths. And they show two of the commuter cruisers, the Swift Fleet, which look like a conventional bicycle, and that cost $1,000. And there's a Swagatron EB Pro Plus at $650, and it's one of these bikes that sits real low with the handlebars and seat kind of sticking straight up. What's it for? Commuter and cruiser e-bikes are designed to make short to moderate trips. Their sturdy frames, thicker tires, and upright riding position add to the rider's comfort and ability to see. The electric assistance allows you to get where you're going easily and comfortably. Who's it for? Those looking for alternatives driving to work and around town. They're lighter and perhaps safer than most Vespa-type scooters, and can be outwitted with luggage racks and bags for carrying groceries and laptops, and often have fenders to keep rainwater coming off the wheels from flashing onto the rider, although the Swagatron does not have such a thing, as neither does the Swift Fleet in the pictures. Road. That shows a specialized turbo Creole, and it was not tested. What's it for? These run from $3,000 to $15,000. What's it for? These e-bikes typically feature the same lightweight frame, narrow tires, and drop-down handlebars as a conventional non-electric touring bike. The assistance offered by an electric motor on these makes it possible to cover longer distance and handle steeper grades with less fatigue. What's it for? Riders who are eager for longer, more challenging cycling, but might not be physically able to for a variety of reasons, and for those who simply want to extend the distance they can ride. The more aggressive riding position may be uncomfortable for some riders, such as those prone to back or neck pain. And then we have cargo. We have a road power bike, road wagon, which was not tested, but it's interesting looking. It's kind of low slung, but it has a car seat on the back for a kid, and it's extra long. And these run from $1,300 to $7,500. What's at core? With stall frames, fat tires, and robust components, cargo e-bikes are made for relatively heavy hauling. They can be configured with rear-mounted seat or cargo rack, and sometimes both. The bone in the picture has both. And a front-mounted cargo rack, or on some specialty models, a large front-end cargo box. Who's it for? Anyone who prefers to transport large loads of groceries or bulky packages, or even small children on property quick larger models, with something other than a car. If you choose a Class 1 cargo e-bike, you'll still get a workout while you pedal. And then we have the mountain version, the Anshear 26 Electric, and that goes for $1,000. And it shows up the range in price from $700 to $15,000. What's it for? With beefier frames, bigger tires, and sometimes long travel suspension systems that soak up the impact of big bumps, typical mountain bikes are built to handle rocks, logs, and other rough terrain. The e-bike versions can help riders pedal up steep grades on loose terrain. Who's it for? This style of e-bike makes sense for someone who wants to experience the thrill of riding a mountain bike down steep trails, but also wants a little help from an electric motor when tackling those often grueling uphill slogs. The electric assistance can also mitigate fatigue, allowing for more hill riding. Now, on a totally different subject, how about the cars owners love most? We asked CR members how they feel about their cars, minivans, SUVs, and trucks. Let their experiences guide you to the ideal vehicle choices. The challenges of buying a new car today are greater than ever. A global pandemic-related chip shortage is responsible for low inventory levels, high prices, and long waits for ordered vehicles to arrive. Even finding a car to test drive has become a problem for some shoppers. And unlike nearly every other purchase, if a car doesn't meet your expectations, it's a major hassle to return, if you can give it back at all. But even before you head out to your local dealership, listen to what current owners say about their vehicle choices. Every year in our annual auto surveys, we gauge owner satisfaction levels by asking our members whether the chance they'd buy or lease the car they currently drive again. We received responses from owners of more than 300,000 vehicles. We also asked them how satisfied they were with specific aspects of their ownership experience, including comfort, driving, and ease of use when it comes to in-car electronics. Using the responses, we calculated a predictor owner satisfaction score for new models. We believe the results, based on the experience of actual car owners with vehicles up to 3 years old, provide valuable insights in how you can help make a successful match with a new car. Cars are in short supply and difficult to obtain for a test drive, making it more important than ever to ask current owners to share their experiences, says Jake Fisher, Senior Director of Auto Testing at Consumer Reports. Keep in mind that while these owners might have different priorities than you when looking for a car, their overall level of satisfaction is a great way to find out the car lived up to their expectations. The following pages show the results of our most recent surveys, including 2022 models predicted to be the most and least satisfying overall, brand-level satisfaction scores, and the models and brands that stand out in five key areas. Expectations fulfilled. This year's surveys reinforced a dynamic we've noticed in the past. Owners seem most satisfied when they have distinct expectations about their vehicles, and those expectations are clearly met. Take the Toyota Prius, which routinely lands them on the top of our new and used car owner satisfaction list. Handling, acceleration, and comfort levels are merely average, but Prius buyers are looking specifically for fuel economy and reliability, and the car delivers those in spades. Similarly, vehicles such as the Chevrolet Corvette and Ford Mustang get top satisfaction scores because they consistently deliver what sports car buyers most yearn for, a potent dose of joie de vivre, even those vehicles that fall short on reliability. By contrast, the Ford EcoSport doesn't live up to its name. The small SUV isn't particularly fuel efficient, nor is it that enjoyable to drive, hence its poor satisfaction score. Likewise, Nissan's Rogue Sport ranks as one of the least satisfying models according to owners. They expect disappointment with the infotainment system, comfort level, and overall value, along with Rogue Sport's lack of sportiness. Just keep in mind that the least satisfying models aren't necessarily poor choices. The Acura MDX, for example, is reliable, comfortable, and powerful. It lands at the lower end of our satisfaction rankings, so those qualities clearly didn't resonate with owners, but you might feel differently. Our surveys also found that owners are continuing to embrace new electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids. Although they're still only a small slice of the overall market, these electrified vehicles register strong satisfaction scores. High achievers in this group include models from Tesla, the new Ford Mustang Mach-E, and the Volkswagen ID.4 EVs, and Toyota Plus Prime and RAV4 Prime Plus plug-in hybrids. Takeaways. Consumers do well to use the survey results for a few important ways. As a gut check, we're not trying to persuade a rogue sport shopper to buy a Chevrolet Corvette just because it has a better owner satisfaction score. Although if that's a nudge you need, go for it. Rather, if you're considering the road sport, take into account that owners of this small SUV tend to report low levels of satisfaction, and perhaps compare it with a competitor that consistently makes its owners happier, like the Subaru Crosstrek. To find alternatives, if the model you most desire is in short supply, satisfaction scores can help you pivot to some solid alternatives. As a tiebreaker, maybe you've done your research, and two or three different SUVs on your short list seem to fit the bill. Owner satisfaction scores from our survey might tip the balance toward one or the other. To drill down, get to the most out of our owner survey data, go to cr.org/satisfaction0322. There you can focus on specific factors that are especially important to you, such as comfort and value. If one of them stands out as an exception on a vehicle, maybe the infotainment system is one weak spot on a model that owners otherwise find deeply satisfying, make sure to weigh it during your test drive. And the least satisfying overall in the testing were the Kia Forte, the Cadillac XT4, the Jeep Renegade, the Jeep Compass, the Infiniti QX50, which kind of surprises me, the Nissan Rogue Sport, the Infiniti Q50, the Chevrolet Trax, the Ford EcoSport, and the Toyota CHR. The most satisfying were the Chevrolet Corvette, the Mazda MX-5 Miata, the Kia Telluride, the Ford Mustang Mach-E, the Tesla Model Y, the RAV4 Prime, the Tesla Model 3, the Ford Mustang, the Volkswagen ID.4, and the Hyundai Tucson. Best and worst in seven categories. And give me a second here. I want to look at something real quick. Okay. Here we highlight the most and least satisfying models in popular vehicle categories. We also include owner scores on five specific factors: value, comfort, styling, driving experience, and infotainment system. If you can use that info to identify models that might satisfy you in ways that matter the most to you, or spot flaws in otherwise high-scoring models. Hyundai Tucson owners, for example, love their cars but not the in-car gadgetry. For a full list of vehicles in all categories and their scores on each factor, go to cr.org/satisfaction0322. Compact SUVs. Most satisfying was the Toyota RAV4 Prime, scored an 86. The Hyundai Tucson scored an 84. The least satisfying was the Ford EcoSport. Luxury compact SUVs. The most satisfying was the Porsche Macan at 100. I won't tell you how much that cost. It's somewhere above $140,000. Scored a 79. The Volvo XC40. The least satisfying was the Infiniti QX50. It's only got a 46. Midsize two-row SUVs. Most satisfying was the Jeep Wrangler. The Subaru Outback tied as well. They both got 73s. The least satisfying was the Honda Passport. How about the luxury midsize large SUVs? The most satisfying was the BMW X7. That's interesting. Driving here today, I was right behind a BMW X7. And the Porsche Cayenne. And that's interesting because I was also behind a Porsche Cayenne. Wow. And the least satisfying was the Cadillac XT6. By the way, the BMW and the Porsche went 79 and 78 comparably. That's interesting. I was behind both of those cars. Midsize three-row large SUVs. The Kia Telluride got an 87. The Hyundai Palisade got an 80. And the Volkswagen Atlas got a 57. Electric vehicles, the most satisfying was the Ford Mustang Mach-E at an 87 and the Tesla Model Y at an 87. The least satisfying was the Hyundai Kona Electric at 58. Most satisfying pickups was Ford 350, the F-350 at 83, and the Honda Ridgeline at 81. The least satisfying was the Chevrolet Colorado and the GMC Camden. Both scored a low of 50. That's pretty terrible. The brands that keep owners coming back. Some automakers have a model or two that ranks among the most satisfying vehicles, while the rest of their lineup falls short in the eyes of the owners. But a handful of manufacturers consistently please please buyers all across or most of their lineups. Here we highlight those top-scoring brands that on average get the highest satisfaction scores. Why does such consistency matter if you're only buying one vehicle? Because automaker lineups aren't static. Some models barely change over the years, but many undergo redesigns every few years, and others are brand new offerings. An automaker that consistently earns high satisfaction scores across his lineup has a track record of strong redesigns and brand new models that fulfill owner expectations. This year, Tesla again tops our brand-level satisfaction ranking, with Porsche in second place and Genesis, which returns after not having enough models to qualify last year, coming in third. Chrysler remains in fourth place, and Dodge moved up three spots to rank fifth. Last year, Buick, Nissan, Cadillac, and Infiniti finished at the bottom of our rankings. This year, we also analyzed the data to determine which automakers excelled at specific factors, such as comfort, how easy the infotainment system is to use, and the perceived value. This enabled buyer to better understand why owners rated certain brands as they did, and to focus on the automakers that showed strength in areas they most care about, and skip the ones with weaknesses. A buyer who highly values driving comfort, for example, may be interested in learning that Mercedes-Benz ranks third among all brands by that standard, beside its relatively low overall ranking. Jeep, meanwhile, ranks in the bottom quarter of the overall brand rankings and also comes in dead last in comfort. That's not surprising, considering the way it rides. Owner satisfaction by brand. First was Tesla, second was Porsche, third was Genesis, fourth was Chrysler, then Dodge, Ram, BMW, Ford, Mazda, Hyundai, Toyota, Volvo, Lexus, Subaru, Lincoln, Mini, Chevrolet, GMC, Honda, Volkswagen, Audi. That's kind of a surprise. And Mercedes-Benz, both of them down scores in the 60s. Kia, Jeep, Buick, Nissan, Acura, Cadillac, and Infiniti. For value, did owners get what they wanted relative to the purchase price? Most satisfying was Subaru, followed by Genesis, Mazda, Buick, Chrysler, and Hyundai. Least satisfying was Porsche, and that's probably because of the extremely high price for those cars. Comfort includes cabin noise as well as comfort in the seating and ride. The most satisfying was Lexus, Lincoln, Mercedes-Benz, Chrysler, Volvo, and Audi. The least satisfying was Jeep. In styling, how the vehicle looks inside and out. The Genesis scored an almost perfect score of 97, followed by the Mini Cooper at 96, the Porsche at 96, the Lincoln 91, Audi at 91, Cadillac at 89, and the Nissan was the least satisfying but still got a 74. For driving, taking into account handling and acceleration, the Tesla got a 96, and not surprisingly, the Porsches, the BMWs were 2 and 3. Dodge, Audi, and Genesis followed up. Least satisfying was Jeep. Infotainment systems easy using in-car electronics using Bluetooth connections. Most satisfying was Tesla, followed by Chrysler, Dodge, Lincoln, GMC, and Chevrolet. The least satisfying was the Acura. Extend the life of your older car. Because of the limited availability and increased cost of new and used cars right now, many people are facing a choice between paying a premium to replace their current car and sometimes spending a lot to keep it running. This can feel like a difficult decision, but some car repairs that used to be considered too expensive make financial sense or are now worth the investment. While shelling out for major repairs to an older car, such as replacing the engine or transmission in a gasoline-powered car or the battery pack in an electric vehicle or hybrid, may set off alarm bells for many consumers. Your car is worth a lot more now than it would be normally. That means investing in keeping it running is probably money well spent. As long as it has been well maintained, the following advice will help you spend wisely on repairs. Do the math. Prices for major repairs such as transmission replacements vary widely from vehicle to vehicle, so depending on which are worthwhile depend on your situation. Review the warranty. The challenge. Repair shops may offer you new parts, less expensive remanufactured parts, used but restored to original specifications, or even cheaper used parts that have been restored. Every part has a different warranty, Ibbotson says. Sometimes factory parts have a better one, and other times remanufactured parts can be a little better. It all depends on the car's make and model and where you're having it repaired, which part you should choose. Keep a fix-it fund, the challenge. Major repairs can be costly, especially for cars no longer under warranty. There's always the possibility with an older car that a repair costing hundreds, if not thousands of dollars could pop up. But less than 40% of Americans have enough money saved to pay for a $1,000 emergency, according to a survey conducted by the Consumer Financial Services company Bankrate. Some automotive repair chains offer financing on the work they do, but the interest rates they charge can approach 30%. All right, let's finish up today with a couple of things from Laughter, the Best Medicine. There's a picture of three books here that are bestsellers written by my unapproving mother. Pride and Prejudice and Ugly Bathroom Tiles. Bride's Dress Revisited. Girl with a Gargantuan Tattoo. No one thing is immortal, especially these jokes. The guy who stole my diary just died. My thoughts are with his family. Oh, God, that's awful. I was reading a great book about the death-defying dog the other day. It was impossible to put down. Oh, these are really bad. I'll never forget my granddad's last word to me just before he died. Are you still holding the ladder? What's with up? We seem to be mixed up about up. Look up up in a dictionary and you'll find about 30 definitions. It's easy to understand. Up, meaning toward the sky or at the top up of the list. But when we wake in the morning, why do we wake up? At a meeting, why does a topic come up? Why do we speak? Up. Why is it up to the assistant to write a report? We call up our friends, brighten up a room, polish up the silver, warm up the leftovers, and clean up the kitchen. We lock up the house and fix up the old car. At other times, people stir up trouble, line up for tickets, and think up excuses. To be dressed is one thing, but to dress up is something special. And up is a contradictory. It's contradictory. When it threatens to rain, we say it's clouding up. When the sun comes out, we say it's clearing up. If it rains, no worries, since the earth will soak it up. Of course, if it doesn't rain for a while, things dry up. One can go on and on, but I think I'll just shut up. As the hedge fund manager steps out of his Porsche, a truck goes racing by, taking the door off the hinges. My Porsche, my beautiful silver Porsche, it's ruined, he screams. A police officer on the scene shakes his head in disgust. Unbelievable, he says. You're so focused on your possessions you didn't even realize your left arm was shorn off when the truck hit you. The hedge fund manager looks down in absolute horror. Oh, no, he cries. My Rolex! And with that, we have run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available at a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.